We see customers really wanting to design the spaces to really address that really rich collaboration that can happen when we're together.
We're back, gang. We are back. Episode number 124 of Future Proof. I'm Bill. Glad to see you. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying well, right, amid this COVID surge, or the surge within the surge, or wherever we are with this thing lately. It's hard to keep track, really, isn't it? Avoid those crowds, folks. Wear that mask. Wash those hands. Stay well, please. Okay. Let's start with this, shall we? This week's show is sponsored, as always, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. All right. I'm recording this from my home office in St. Louis, Missouri, to be specific. I've been here for a long, long time. I think I've told you all this before, but I've been full-time remote since 2005, right? So some of you, maybe a lot of you, have been full-time remote since when? I don't know, March, maybe? That's when a big chunk of folks joined the world of remote work. And it's changing things, right? The future of work, so to speak, which, by the way, that phrase, it's been used so much lately that it really ought to be banned like asbestos, as far as I'm concerned. That and new normal, too. Oh, my God, if I had to hear that one more time, right? But there's a bit of truth in every cliche, right? Things are changing. The way we work is changing. The idea of what an office should be is changing. Here are some thoughts. They come from Slack CEO and co-founder Stuart Butterfield, who spoke to the BBC for an article titled Coronavirus, How the World of Work May Change Forever. Here's what he had to say. He said, quote, "We all know that work will never be the same, even if we don't yet know all the ways in which it will be different. What we can say with certainty is that the sudden shift to distributed work has provided a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reimagine everything about how we do our jobs and how we run our companies. If we can move past decades of orthodoxy about 9-to-5 office-centric work, there's an opportunity to retain the best parts of office culture while freeing ourselves from bad habits and inefficient processes, from ineffective meetings to unnecessary bureaucracy. Every leader believes they can do better and things can move faster. This is their chance. From the employee perspective, the shift is massive and very consequential. People are making new choices about where they want to live and creating new expectations about flexibility, working conditions, and life balance that can't be undone. Our Future Forum research of 4,700 knowledge workers found the majority never want to go back to the old way of working. Only 12% want to return to full-time office work, and 72% want a hybrid remote office model moving forward. All this change in our methods will go hand in hand with a change in our tools. Of course, we think Slack has an important role to play as a new kind of headquarters for a digital-first world, but the opportunities for digital transformation are expansive and wide-ranging. Businesses that do it well will drive engagement, achieve organizational agility, maintain alignment, and empower teamwork across all disciplines and locations. They will have a competitive advantage in this new era of work." End quote. Again, that was Slack CEO Stuart Butterfield there. And then there's this. It comes from futurist Ian Kahn, who wrote an article for Accounting Web recently titled "Why Working from Home is the Future of Accounting." He writes, quote, "The accounting profession must learn and adapt to the needs of the post-pandemic world. If operating lean means moving to a smaller space, offering the chance to work remotely, and getting used to collaboration via video conferencing and shared documents, then firms are pivoting toward being more future ready. with no guarantees of what a future disruption may look like, whether it's in a form of a pandemic, natural disaster, or geopolitical conflict, true prudence is enabling systems to operate based on a talent-centric philosophy, distributing risk across different regions or locations, and operating as an organization that can come together when needed and stay distributed otherwise. End quote. So, yeah, you could say things are changing, as I think we've established. And that brings me to my guest this week. I don't think I've introduced her yet, have I? It's time I did. She is Cheryl Duvall. Cheryl is the consulting practice area leader for Gensler's Southeast region. Gensler, of course, being the renowned global integrated architecture, design, planning, and consulting firm. They got more than 5,000 professionals and 50 offices worldwide. Their purpose is to, quote, create a better world through the power of design. And Cheryl certainly lives that. She helped the MACPA and the BLI design their current workspaces. And those spaces are beautifully and efficiently designed. But anyway, Cheryl and I sat down recently to talk about, a bunch of stuff. What is work, for example? Do the places where we do our work actually need to look like going forward? And will we even need offices in the future? And how is leadership changing as a result? And what kinds of new skills do leaders have to bring to the table? All of that. Some really great insights into a critical issue for our profession, for all professions, really, from one of the most knowledgeable professionals around in this area, in my opinion. Here is my conversation this week with Cheryl Duvall. So Cheryl, I guess the typical first question that most everybody is asking everybody else these days is, how are you? How is everyone well with you and yours? How are things going?
Oh, thanks so much for asking. My husband and I are doing well. Our three kids are healthy, and we actually became grandparents during COVID. So wow. For the first time, right.
That's, talk about silver linings. That's really cool.
It is indeed. And my 88-year-old parents are living in their own home. I've never been so thankful for that. They're both still doing well and staying safe. They're still stubborn. They still go out to their own groceries. They won't just have them delivered, but yep. It's all good, Bill. I have nothing to complain about.
That's great news. I'm glad to hear it. It's been a crazy, crazy few months. So I guess my next question, getting more to the point, is what's work been like for you these days, Cheryl? I mean, as a result of this pandemic, are you hearing from folks who want to maybe redesign their offices in a more safer, physically distant way? I mean, what are you hearing from clients at this point, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Well, we're hearing a lot of different things, and it's also changed throughout the pandemic, which is very interesting to me to think about the different phases that we've even gone through in the kind of work that I do. Mm-hmm. And I lead the consulting and real estate practice area for Gensler.
Okay.
And in that, we are usually the ones that are helping our clients understand the strategy. Like, what is it that you most want to achieve? What do you want your office to do? So we get engaged early on just because of that, right? Mm-hmm. Before the design teams start designing and the architecture teams are working, we come in early to help our clients identify and outline what their goals are overall, and how we can use space, interior space and architecture and everything that we do to support those goals. So you can imagine that the goals have really shifted. They've changed. They've gone on hold. Like, all sorts of things have happened during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting to me are these different phases, because initially we were getting calls right when we all started working from home. And for us, that was Friday the 13th, I think, was my last day in March in our office. And I haven't been back since.
Yep.
And most of our my colleagues across the U.S., now we're a global company, so some of our other colleagues have been back in China and other places, but in the US, for the most part, all of our offices are still working remotely. Yep. And our clients had the similar things, right? Some clients were able to still keep some people if they were essential workers, or they had to go into their office because it was a special place, like a pharmaceutical company or some, you know, skiffs and defense contractors that have labs that they have to get to. Mm-hmm. For the most part, most of our customers were having their people work from home. So initially, in the first, I would say, month or so of us working from home, I think we were all still thinking we were going to get back fairly quickly.
It was, we were having those conversations too. It was like, oh, in 4 or 6 weeks or whenever this is all over, then, you know, we'll all be back together. And didn't quite turn out that way, did it?
Exactly. And so the first couple of things that the requests we were getting were to help customers help their people get them back. Like, once they get back, are we going to have one-way corridors like the grocery stores are having? Mm-hmm. How do we distance? You know, so the social distancing. So we were doing a lot of plans with circles around all the workstations, mm-hmm. and identifying, are they 6 feet apart or 7 or 8 or 9? We had some customers that said they wanted to maintain 9-foot distancing mm-hmm. in their offices. So we were doing a lot of these circle plans, as we called them,
yep.
and with sanitation protocols and signage and those kind of things. But then once it started settling down, and I think in all of our heads that, you know what, this might be a few months here in the US where we're working from home. Then some of our projects that went on hold initially because people didn't know what was happening, all of a sudden it picked up and leases are still expiring, right? Mm-hmm. So no matter what's happening out there, many of our customers have leases that are expiring. And some, especially if they're large, you know, very large offices, they need a long time frame to plan ahead. So the next phase of what I would say in this work from home period has been really much more research driven too, because we've had the time to do these surveys and then use those surveys to inform the real estate moving forward.
Okay.
So many of our customers, we have a survey, our company does, that we just issued our second work from home survey. The first one went out in April, May, gathered data, and we reported on that starting in June. Then as we saw that this was an extended period of time, we then had issued a second survey, and it happened to correspond with when all those spikes were happening over the summer mm-hmm. in many states, so late July and August. So we just released, we've analyzed all that data and have released that. And there's a lot of information coming from that. And that same survey, our clients can hire us to then do to help them gather data specifically for their company, right? Okay. And so we're using the data that we get back from those surveys to help inform, you know, what is it? Are people enjoying working from home? Do they want a hybrid situation? Do they want to keep working from home sometimes but come back to the office, or not at all? You know what? And so this starts to, we have to redefine what the office is there for now, right? So what is this physical workplace? Like, why would we come to the office? Mm-hmm. And these surveys that we're doing either globally that our company does, and this US one that we just released, we have them going in UK and France and Australia too, but we can also use those same survey questions with our clients so that they can then take the data from their survey and compare it and benchmark it against what they're seeing in their sector, because we have 10 different sectors. So if they're, you know, like MACPA, right? We have management advisory is a sector. Mm-hmm. Finance is a different sector. Mm-hmm. You know, legal firms are a different sector. So we can actually take the data and slice and dice it, you know, and look at it from several different viewpoints, including demographics, you know, generational and, you know, any diversity and other things. So, sure. So it's a really rich data set.
Are there any, from all these surveys as a whole, are there any generalities that you can make in terms of people's mindset when it comes to remote work? Or is it very much kind of an individual type of thing based on sectors or even down to organizations?
There are sector differences, which are very interesting. The survey we just did was one of the data points that I particularly zoned in on was how many people want to be working full-time from home. The first survey we sent out, that was 12% wanted to keep working full-time from home. And now it's gone up to 19%.
Oh, interesting.
So I think people started getting more and more comfortable. Let me make sure it's 19%. Yes. Mm-hmm. 19% want to be working full-time at home. So that is up, you know, 7 percentage points since the first survey that we did in April, May. Mm-hmm. And if you can remember, at that time too, it was a light switch flipping.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no notice, and schools were closing with no notice. And all of a sudden, parents are having to, you know, juggle with the young children. I'm not at that age anymore, but my kids are, right? So they are juggling the homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And now it's a little easier. People have had time to, you know, get used to it, right? And they've been able to plan more. I just talked with somebody this morning that he got together with a couple of other families, and they hired a teacher to help teach their children this fall. So they essentially have a private school going so that he and his career wife can also be working and doing their jobs, right? So I think that initial, oh my gosh, what are we doing in the spring? Now that fall's come around, people have had time to make plans. So when we see the data going, more people thinking, you know, this working from home thing has worked for me. That same survey, though, that we just did, 29% say that they want to be full-time in the office. Mm-hmm. So you've got the 29% full-time in the office, 19% full-time at home. That leaves 52% that want a hybrid work model.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, some a couple of days at home and a couple of days at the office.
That's what we're hearing, a lot of the same type of thing from the people that we work with, our members in the accounting and finance world too, that it's not going to be all one or all the other, but it may end up looking like you said, a hybrid of remote work and office work. I'm curious what you think a post-pandemic office might look like in that type of environment. Are we talking about a much smaller space, or how does it look in your mind?
So I think this is an incredibly exciting time to really reimagine the workplace, mm-hmm. because I think that there are so many different possibilities, and they start with the question, what is it that you want your workplace to do?
Yep.
Like if you bring people back, why are you bringing them back, and what can they do here at the office that they can't do at home, or they can't do as well at home? So the post-pandemic office, in my mind, is a lot of happy workers because they have more choices in where to work and when to work in those locations. And when I say that, Bill, it's not just the work from home, what we call external mobility. That's like the working from home or work anywhere, working from an airport. That's external mobility, but also internal mobility. And what we designed for MACPA, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, remember we have all those different offices with, it's an office, but with different spaces within that office, right?
Yeah, so it's a very kind of, initially your first thought walking in is, oh, this is an open office, right? But then there are also a number of closed, very private areas where people can go to have, you know, take a phone call or have quiet private conversations and things like that. So yeah, it was an interesting way of designing it.
Exactly. And that, so pre-pandemic, the trend had been going more to that, and we call it ABW spaces, activity-based working kind of design, where we're designing, in that case, in the MACPA's case, they chose not to have any assigned private offices. They have one office that is set up as an audio privacy room. It's set up as a desk, you know, with chairs, and but it's not assigned.
We call it the situation room, actually.
Ah, there you go. but everything else, we're open workstations, right? But there's the cafe. We call it like the work cafe, right? With a separate seating area, you know, right off of, you know, where the microwaves and the, you know, the sink and the, what we would call pantry, can't really call it a kitchen, but, and then you have the enclosed conference room. You have open collaborative areas. You have a couple of smaller focus rooms. I also call those audio privacy rooms. And so there's a variety of places. You know, there's that open area at the back, which is much more collaborative with the whiteboards that pull around, and right. and people can sort of sit there and sort of park just for a couple of, you know, an hour or two and do some work looking out, you know, into the, you know, across to the trees and that kind of thing. So we were designing those spaces ahead of time. So when you ask me, what does a post-pandemic office look like? I think it's more of that. But I think in MACPA's case, they also assigned everybody, it's one-to-one. You come in, and I think that's still the case there, that you have an assigned desk.
Yes, yes. Or I don't know that we've actually gone to the lengths of assigning desks, but people just have naturally found a spot where they kind of make it theirs, right? You know, so and they mm-hmm. and they all kind of gravitate toward that. So yep.
And I remember planning with, you know, Tom and Jackie and Skip when we were talking about all that, we were planning that if MACPA were to grow and you had more people than you had spots for people to sit in, that at that time you would start thinking, well, maybe it's unassigned spaces. So when you come in, you just, you know, you grab a spot, whatever's open. Yep. Right.
And those rare occasions when I come in, I work full time from my home in St. Louis, but occasionally I've got to be back in the office in Baltimore. And when I do, that's exactly what I do. I just find an open spot that looks comfortable and plop myself down there. And that's my spot for the day. So, yeah.
Yes. And so I think looking forward, we're going to see more of that. But I do think our data is showing that people like working from home for focus work. Mm-hmm. But they don't like working from home as much for collaboration work. The collaboration piece is harder to do at home. You can do it. You and I are collaborating right now.
Yep.
But it is harder to do than if we were in the office together. So in a post-pandemic office, when hopefully the vaccine is out, when we're not having to do as many, you know, we can still pick up that same, you know, share the marker, you know,
right.
go to the whiteboard, share some things. We see customers really wanting to design the spaces to really address that really rich collaboration that can happen when we're together.
Yep.
And those kind of spaces may start replacing some of the individual workspaces, because if 52% of people in our survey want to do hybrid, and of those, 24%, nearly a quarter, said they want to be at home 3 or 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And usually my advice is, if you're having your staff work from home more than half the week, they should not have an assigned desk.
That makes sense.
So they should be sharing, and it doesn't have to be like, you know, two people sharing a desk. It could just be you come in like you do, you look for a place that's comfortable and you work there.
Yep. Yep.
And so we need to provide lockers for people to put their things away, right? So if we don't want to share a mouse anymore or a keyboard or a headset,
mm-hmm.
the headsets were always a little questionable, I think, but a lot of people would share keyboards, right? You went right. in, there is a station, you know, put your laptop down, or you just, maybe it's not even a laptop, it's a computer for you to use.
Mm-hmm.
You were using some, you know, a shared keyboard. So mm-hmm. we might see more lockers so that people can put their own keyboard somewhere and have their own stuff, but then they can, you know, then just go and use anything.
Yep.
So in some cases, I do believe that some of the real estate need might go down if more and more people are working from home and they can come into the office, you know, as desired, or as their company sets it up, maybe it's teams that come mm-hmm. in, maybe the real estate can decrease. But we're also seeing cases where maybe more meeting and collaborative spaces will replace some of those individual workstations.
I gotcha. That's really interesting. And I was going to ask this here in a few minutes, but I think this is a logical place to ask it now is, I mean, that you mentioned, you know, one of the things that people might miss is that ability to collaborate with somebody who's physically close to them, right? And one of the things, I mean, you wrote a blog post back in January before the crisis that I thought was really interesting. It was about something that you called inadvertent knowledge transfer.
Yes. So
in other words, if I'm interpreting that right, the stuff that we all learn just by being in a room with other people, right? Overhearing their conversations, seeing the consequences of their behaviors. I'm curious what, a couple of things. What are the benefits of that type of learning, first of all? And how has that been impacted by this crisis? And how can we keep it going, you know, in kind of a post-pandemic world?
So I think that is the biggest victim of the work from home, that inadvertent knowledge transfer. Seamless mentoring is another way that I call it.
Oh, I like that too.
Seamless mentoring is very tough in a virtual world.
Yep.
So we have to become very intentional about it, which means we have to schedule time to mentor in most cases right now. So in that blog that you mentioned, I talk about my first work experience as a young interior designer, just had graduated college, and I start working for an architecture firm where it was completely 100% open, except the two principals had their own office. But one of those principals never sat in his office, never. I never saw him sit there. He was always out sitting right alongside of us in the studio, and I learned so much. He literally sat next to me for the first month that I was there. And I learned so much from him and hearing him on the phone and, you know, hearing my other colleagues. I can't even estimate how quickly I advanced in my career because of an open office environment with not just people like me, but my boss, you know, very senior, that was teaching me really important stuff like how to talk to a client on the phone, you know, how to write an agenda for a meeting, all of those things that weren't necessarily taught to me in college, right?
And it wasn't like structured instruction.
No.
It was just, you were just picking it up from being the general vicinity. So.
And I'll never forget, he used to pace when he was on the phone. And back then we had wired phones. It wasn't wireless, right? Right. And he had a long cord and he would pace back and forth. And I learned so much from overhearing him talking on the phone. And I talk about that in that blog because I was in our DC office and we were under construction and one of our managing directors had been located temporarily out in the open so that he could, you know, so that renovation could be done. And he lost his private office for a few months. And he said, you know, just he had somebody thank him for taking a call and making the call with an attorney near this person. And she overheard this legal conversation. Nothing was confidential about it. He said, normally he would have taken that to an audio privacy room, but they were all booked at the moment because we were under renovation. It was very tight. And he said, it didn't even dawn on me that I was helping to teach somebody something, right? Mm-hmm. So that mentoring is definitely a victim of this. And so we have to be intentional. I'll give you a quick example. Yesterday, I had a meeting in the afternoon cancel unexpectedly. And because of that, I had just sent a edits back to one of my young colleagues who was writing her first proposal ever.
Oh, wow.
And she had sent me the proposal that morning for me to review, and I had a lot of edits to it. And I sent it back to her, but because this meeting canceled, I said, I booked a meeting time with her. She happened to be open. I booked it. And then we got on the phone, and I went line item by line item with her so that she could learn. Because otherwise, she would have just seen the edits, made them, you know, accepted the review changes that we do on Word docs, right? Mm-hmm. And it would have gone out the door. Right. But she and I needed that time together so that I could mentor her. And she thanked me so much at the end. And I was so thankful that the meeting had canceled so that I could have that time with her. And that's what I mean by we have to schedule these intentional meetings. I could have just filled that time. I had plenty to do. I was trying to get ready for your podcast today. I had plenty to do yesterday, you know, but I purposely stopped myself and said, no, this is the right time to do that mentoring that we have to be intentional about.
And we have to start thinking. So what are some other ways that leaders should be thinking a little bit differently about work in general today? I mean, what should they be prioritizing, right, going forward?
They really need to prioritize the well-being of their workers. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot in the press about that, right? Health is so top of mind right now. And again, because our survey is showing us that workers want to be engaged in their work and productive, and they have found some silver linings in this working from home. And they're indicating they want to keep doing some of that going back mm-hmm. to the office, right? So some hybrid nature. And when we dig into what factors into that, a lot of it is also related to commute. Mm-hmm. So the length of the commute and the people's desire to get back to the office, really, if there's a strong correlation, the longer the commute, you know, the more that a higher percentage of people that want to at least work from home 1, 2, or 3 days a week. So sure. That's probably no surprise. But with that also came some, you know, unexpected conveniences that they enjoyed about being at home. For me personally, not having a commute, I turned all of that into exercise. Mm-hmm. I am healthier today than I was 9 months ago because I have turned that into exercise time.
Yep.
So I think our leaders need to really be thinking about their workers and asking them what they want and trusting them, like show trust.
Yep. That kind of ties into, and you may be familiar with Dan Pink's research and some of the things that he's written about in the past. But the one thing I keep going back to is that the three things that he says that all workers want, right? Autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And autonomy right at the top of that list, right? To do their work in the way that they think is right and be trusted to do that work. And so I think that ties right into, you know, the research that's been out there for a long time, but now it's becoming more important than ever almost.
Exactly. I just read an article this morning that was forwarded to me from one of our government leaders in our DC office about agencies within the government, and they, I guess, testified. A senator was talking about how they came in and talked about how this time period of working from home has been so brutally productive that it's really changing what many of these government agencies are looking at for going back.
Right.
And that there's been just such a huge percentage of people working from home and being as productive, if not more productive.
Yep.
And it in this article talks about that importance of trust, that it used to be that the managers had to see those people, right? And again, like I said earlier, we got forced into this. This was a flipping of a switch. There was no training managers to get comfortable with how do you supervise somebody you can no longer see.
Right.
And I would always say that in so many of these workplaces with that still have the tall panels, you know, just because you saw someone walking around, you don't know what they were really working on, right? If you're not, unless you're standing over them a lot of the time, right? So just because you see somebody in the office doesn't mean that they're being productive, right? And so we've had to look at different ways to measure productivity and to really look at the output of it. And you know, people have deadlines, and maybe that means that you know, my husband works for a company where he's managing a team and they do daily stand-ups, you know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of IT, you know, companies do this. And every single morning, everyone gets together for 15 minutes and they say what they're going to do that day. And then they do it and the next day they're reviewing it, right? There's so many different ways to make sure that people are meeting their deadlines and getting their work done. If, you know, a lot of times there's a deadline that's in the future, maybe it's too far. So having those tiny little, you know, checkpoints are really important for people. But trust is really paramount, and that notion of, you know, giving people choice.
Yeah. Is that kind of a, I mean, this notion of results only work, because it's been around for a while, and I'm just kind of curious what your thoughts are. Are we kind of hitting an intersection here where this is more and more organizations are starting to understand that we have no choice except to turn them loose and hold them accountable, yes, but let them do their thing and do it in the way that they will be most productive.
I think so. I think this is a huge turning point in worker. It's like the next revolution in workers' rights, almost, right? it's like we have demonstrated that in very difficult circumstances with no notice. This is like change management on steroids, right? What we've been through in the last 8 or 9 months. And we've demonstrated that we can do this. And we should be trusted to be able to help design our work lives to better reflect our true selves.
That's a great point. It seems like that word is almost, or that phrase rather, has almost become cliche at this point, post-pandemic. Everyone's talking about what's going to happen post-pandemic. But what is, based on the research that you're seeing, the trends that you're seeing over the last 6 months, 8 months, what does a post-pandemic office look like in your mind?
So I do think we're going to see more shared private spaces. Our research is showing that people want more privacy. I think they've enjoyed the privacy that they had in their own home office, right? Or their dining room table or whatever. It was still private. They could focus. They weren't as distracted, maybe.
Yep.
So moving back, I think they're going to want more private spaces. And we see that in our research. They're saying more private spaces. It doesn't mean more private offices, but more private places to do more focused work.
Gotcha.
I also believe and have had many clients say this, and some of our research is pointing to this too, that they also desired shared private spaces. So when they get back, could they have a project team room that's dedicated to them? Right? It's a shared space. It's not an individual space, but we have already seen some requests go up for more shared team rooms, whether they're dedicated or not is another story. So I think that is something that we will see. It will still be a mix of open and enclosed spaces and still be a mix of individual and group spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, like I said earlier, that some of these individual spaces may decrease in order to make room for some of these more shared spaces for teams to use for the benefits of collaboration and convening. I also think there's going to be more unassigned workstations, like we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the numbers I always like to say to people usually gets a jolt. Pre-pandemic, it did. People, organizations pay for leases for 168 hours a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
24 hours in a day times 7 days is 168 hours.
Yep.
And all of the leases are for all of that. But we only occupy in US on average those offices for 40 of those 168.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hours, right? Mm-hmm. So now picture you have someone coming into the office only 1 or 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's 8 or 16 hours of that 168 hours that desk sits there a week that they're going to be occupying it.
Right.
The math just doesn't support having so many one-to-one assigned spaces, as much as it does say, make sure you're providing a place for people to work. So when Bill comes to town, there's a place for him to work,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't have to be assigned to Bill's name on it when Bill's not there. I mean, we had a client just a few months ago who only came into that office once out of 3 months, an office of one of my clients, And they still, and she had a full-time office in the office that she was in most of the time when she wasn't traveling.
Right.
So this one person had two assigned offices in two different buildings. And I thought, how is that sustainable over time?
Right.
So I do think that we're going to see, you know, in addition to more shared private spaces, I think we're going to see more unassigned workstations. One more thing. I also think we're going to see small neighborhoods. We've been designing for some companies that have asked us to, can we have smaller neighborhoods? Maybe they send their teams in 2 weeks at a time and then send a team home because they're sort of self-quarantining together.
I see.
And that might be something for this pandemic, for this moment. But they've also said, could we segment off some of those neighborhoods? So if we had to separate people, we could quickly and do it in a flexible way so it doesn't segment them forever.
I see.
And I think that we might see more of these smaller neighborhoods. And many of our clients are saying, yeah, this is this year's pandemic, but what we need to be flexible down the road.
Right.
So I think we're seeing a lot more flexibility being built into the design overall so that customers can very quickly shut something down or quarantine it off. We're also seeing customers saying, you know, and us helping them understand how flexibility over time might be able to morph something, you know, walls and furniture that move a little bit to enable teams to come together to collaborate in a much more creative way than maybe they did before. So instead of being so stuck, can we make things so that they're very agile and movable?
Right.
And I think more of that flexibility will certainly be seen in this post-pandemic world.
That's really interesting. I don't know how I want to phrase this, but so that some great thoughts there post-pandemic, but what happens post-pandemic? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, what does the ultimate future of work look like to you? Are we headed for a place with less open space or offices that are designed to incorporate some of these protections, personal health protections? I mean, I'm just kind of curious what you're seeing about things that are starting to become incorporated now that ultimately might be a permanent part of our workspaces going forward.
Well, we're certainly seeing much more immersive technologies. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have this hybrid situation. I think that's post-pandemic and post-post.
Mm-hmm.
I think the genie is out of the bottle, Bill.
Yeah,
I think many people do not want to be full-time at the office. In fact, our research says only 29% want to be 5 days at the office. So when you're not at the office, one of my biggest concerns during this whole thing has been that hybrid situation when we start getting back and some people are in the office and some aren't. Some are in that conference room. Picture what it was like before, right? And you work remotely a lot. I'm sure you felt like this before. Mm-hmm. If you were one of 10 people in a meeting, but you're the only one that's remote, how hard is it to insert yourself, to get a comment in, to have anyone hear you?
Almost impossible, especially like when I started doing this back in 2005, the technology wasn't there yet, right? And it was brutal, Cheryl, it really was.
Yes. And so what I think is happening and what I hope is happening is that we're leveraging technology more than ever now. So this post-pandemic and post-post-pandemic office is going to really celebrate what technology has enabled us to do and will enable us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the augmented reality and virtual reality, the augmented reality is fairly easy now with our, you know, smartphone devices and other things. But as technologies get more competitive and the prices start coming down, I think we're going to see much more immersive environments. And we're going to have to, because we're going to have to make sure that the people who aren't in the room, their voices are still being heard in that room and their faces are being heard and we can read their body language and all of that.
Yep.
And, you know, pre-pandemic, I had a client that had some really nice. I was always virtual for them. I rarely was able to be with them. And they had some nice technology so that when I was part of their meetings, they had a camera that would, you know, would circle over to the person saying, so I could see that person, right?
Right.
But they didn't have, they were writing on whiteboards though, and the camera wouldn't zoom in to that piece close enough that I could see it.
Right.
So yeah. My colleague would have to take a picture of it and then send me a picture so that then I could see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was a few years ago. That was probably 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, this technology is really changing. And I think we're going to have to really invest in that technology. And that might mean that if some of the real estate costs come down, maybe they take that same money and put it back into the technology that enables us to be really immersive and be very much like we're in the room together. Because what I think about this pandemic is it has leveled the playing field. We were all virtual.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it still is. I have a client that a couple of weeks ago, there were four of them in the room and the rest of us were virtual like this. And it was hard for us to hear them because they were all talking from one. It wasn't a room that was technologically, mm-hmm. you know, outfitted or equipped to have this kind of immersive situation.
Yep.
And I thought, well, if there were 15 of us that were virtual and only four of them in the room, but what when it flips? If that had been 15 of them in the room and four of us and the technology isn't there, we're going to be left out.
Sure.
And we have to make sure that, you know, this has really leveled the playing field and made everyone have an equal voice in many ways. So I think that that's something we're going to see in this new work environment. But I do believe that it's still going to be a mix of the open and enclosed. I think it's going to be how we use those spaces and who occupies them might change a little bit with this unassigned seating. But I think in general, they're still going to be, they might appear a lot like they do now, but with better technology and maybe more flexibility so that it's user controlled versus mm-hmm. having to call a facilities department and have it, you know, changed out over a, you know, a weekend or a month or something like that. I think that's going to change too.
Curious, are you one of those 29% that wants to be in the office full time, or where do you fall in that spectrum, Cheryl?
I am in the I want to work from home 3 or 4 days a week.
Okay, so you're.
I only want to go in there 1 or 2 days a week.
Yeah. Where most people are, as a matter of fact, is what that sounds like. So.
And Bill, I can have access to all these books right here on my shelves.
Isn't it great?
When I'm in the office, I left a few books there, my favorites, because mm-hmm. I thought I was only going to be gone for 3 or 4 weeks, right? And they're still there. And I'm like, I'm missing them. I think I actually bought another one just to have it because I couldn't, it was cheaper to do that than to go into town and get it.
get permission. Here's hoping you can get in there and get those books again sometime very soon.
There you go.
And Cheryl Duvall, thank you so much for joining me today, for your insights. It's going to be fascinating to see how all this stuff plays out, but you've given us a lot of great food for thought. So thanks for being here.
It was my pleasure. Thank you, Bill.
All right, great stuff there this week from Cheryl Duvall. She's the consulting practice area leader for Gensler's Southeast region. The website is Gensler.com. That's GENSLER.com. Lots of great stuff there, including Gensler's latest U.S. workplace survey for 2020. Check it out. A lot of data that Cheryl cited in our conversation is in there, plus lots of other stuff too. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering those future ready. I almost forgot what I was going to say there. Start mastering these future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. We'll talk soon.